Jupiter Broadcasting presents this program in stereo.
This episode brought to you in part by GoDaddy.com.
This week on the Linux Action Show, has our call for the ultimate Linux home server finally been answered? Just how does the B3 compare to your own custom-built server? We find out. Then we cover the joint task force established by Debian, why the Batman protocol is important, and who is behind the latest Android copyright hoopla. Plus so much more. Oh, this week on the Linux Action Show. Welcome to Season 16, Episode 1 of the Linux Action Show. My name is Brian. With me for the first time, for the last time, is Chris.
Hey there, Brian. Check out this awesome Runs Linux Forever. Now, I got to make a disclaimer. This is not a cheap Runs Linux, but this is a video mixer, a hardware one. It looks like it could run a Starship, Brian, and it was sent in by Marcos. And let me double check that I got that. Yep, sent in by Marcos. He actually works at a video broadcasting studio down in Australia, like a local affiliate. And I think this piece of hardware has a few zeros after it, so it's not like something you're going to pick up, but it's a Ross video mixer. And it runs a touchscreen Red Hat Linux box on it, and he said that these boards, which seriously look like they could fly the Starship Enterprise.
Dude, easily.
Yeah.
Dude, that has way more buttons than the bridge of the Starship Enterprise.
It does. And it runs a touchscreen Linux, which is awesome, and it pops open like a Star Trek console would.
Oh, nice.
I know. So these are really cool, and he said that the unit they replaced this with was 50 years old, so they went from a totally analog system to this super cool, high-tech, HD, Linux-powered, touchscreen capable broadcast machine.
Dude, what do those things run for?
I want to say that...
Dude, look at those knobs. Look at those levers.
I know.
Oh, my gosh,
I know.
Awesome.
And look, QT on the touchscreen, too, which
is
really cool.
Here's the thing. I just need those levers for my desktop. I don't know what I would use it for, because it wouldn't work that great for scrolling, even. But, man, I need it. Dude, maybe for zooming. A little compass zooming, just... Awesome.
You know, if you could just have them be USB keyboard commands, and then you just would assign them to something, that would work, right? That's
right. It's got to be, you know, analog. You know what I mean? It's got to be like slow zoom
click.
In.
Yeah. You know, I remember Mr. Sulu had a lever that he pushed up, and some of them kind of look like that.
Oh, that'd be cool.
So I think the lower end ones start around $70,000. So, not exactly something.
All right, I decided I can't afford one. I'm going to go ahead and stick with not having one for a while.
Yeah, that's
going to be my general
levers.
Goal.
I agree. Hey, before we go, we should say holler to the...
Fedora? You're running Fedora? $70,000?
I might be Red Hat Enterprise. I might be Red Hat Enterprise, to be honest with you.
Oh,
see,
boy.
That's what I was thinking. Did you want to say...
disclaimer, this is a Hates Fedora Week.
Did you want to say a holler over to the guys at Hack 5? They did a special
Those fine folks over at Hack 5. Go watch the latest episode of Hack 5. They got
Hack5.org.
Is it Hack5.org?
Let me double check.
HAK5. They did a whole thing on Illumination Software Creator because it's fancy. And
yeah, it is.
They like to cover fancy things, so they covered that. So it's actually pretty cool. Go over there. You know,
episode 904 of Hack 5. Wow, 904 episodes.
Feel free to let the Hack 5 people know, email them in, comment, whatever, that you want to see more Illumination Software Creator. In fact, you have not seen enough Illumination Software Creator.
How could you?
And that, when there's nothing else to talk about Illumination Software Creator for, you just wouldn't mind having Chris and Brian on their show to talk about their show, and then just to talk about them, what clothes they're wearing, etc., because that's what you want from your Hack 5. So just go ahead and get those comments in over to them. Chris, you like this. Don't give me that face. I know you're into this.
Okay.
You would love, you know,
you're right, Brian.
Like you go on Twit, you go on Hack 5.
Yeah,
you go
sure. I'd talk about clothing.
What
are
you wearing today?
Yeah, right,
like,
right.
Well, you know, I picked this up at the Sears. This is the Sears brand plaid shirt.
You give me too much credit, dude. I don't roll that big. I'm more Thriftway kind of guy.
I'm trying to figure out what the other thing would be.
Thriftway.
Below the Sears pickup. But
I think it's like Value Village, man. That's the way I go.
Dude,
cheap.
You get some pimp stuff. All right, enough
oh my gosh,
clothes,
dude.
Chris. We got to talk about other stuff.
Speaking of cheap, so you know the .co, Brian, that's the big thing, right? And during the Super Bowl, we had a deal because you can buy a .co domain for $11.99. Guess what? GoDaddy's hooking us up. The $749 deal is back.
$749.
It's only until March 31st. So one great way to show your support for Linux Action Show is to jump on these special offers, because they can, you know, they can very accurately gauge how much people use them. And I had a great idea, dude, and I want to brainstorm with you and the live room.
Later.
So, .co, I thought, that is perfect for a shorter domain. And JupiterBroadcasting.com is,
well, it is
super
one
long.
Shorter.
Right? I mean, if you're putting an M on the end of your domain name, that's old school.
So
that's
really
like how your grandparents
about,
did it.
We got JupiterBroadcasting.co. You just get to the point where you type the last O, and you're like, ugh, I can't go any further.
No.
Enter. That's,
no.
That's what new domain is.
I'll say
for,
we
right?
come up with, like, we need to come up with like we did JBLive.tv for the live stream. We need like I tried JB.co, but that was taken already. You know, I need something with some jazz. JBroad. Oh, rolling on the floor in the chat room says JBroad.co. That's not bad. Let's see if JBroad's available. What do you think? You don't like JBroad?
Someone makes a good point that we should probably register linu.xxx, because that could be awesome.
Ooh, linux.co would be cool too. But first I'm going to say JBroad, because I tried JBL, but then I thought it made me think of the speaker company, you know? So, and yeah. I didn't want to get sued or anything. I mean, I'm sure they wouldn't, but see, it's
yeah.
JBroad. If JBroad's available, I'm going to go with it. I'm going to do it. Because it's 7.4. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, look at that. And it says right there. Dude, it says $11.99. I'm going to get that S for $7.49. But here's how you have to do it. We have a very special code to get that. You have to use our very limited code, LinuxCO1. And you have to use it by March 31st. And that'd be an awesome way to support the Linux Action Show. Is LinuxCO1. All one word.
Lowercase, uppercase.
Lowercase or whatever. Lowercase. I think you can shout it or just say it. And then you know what you get? You get yourself $7.49 instead of $11.99. You support the Linux Action Show. And .co, way more hip than .com.
Oh, yeah. Nobody's using .coms anymore.
Dude.
The next big bubble is going to be the .co bubble.
Look at your keyboard, Brian. You see where that M's at? That M is way, way, way down there.
Yeah, it's really close to the dot that you just had to type.
Well, no, because I had to type a C and an O, so I'd already actually, yeah. I'd gone way away from that. I mean,
and then the O is just right next to that M also.
Right, and also, I've always thought that the W, if you flip it upside down, or the M looks like a W if you flipped it upside down, then, which reminds me of Wario, and Wario is a bad guy.
And then you got to hit enter after it anyway, and that's even further over than the M.
Well,
so
I'm already...
Like M's really on your way. So really, M's just super convenient to type.
Yeah.
You know what they should really
maybe
do?
Maybe they could do dot,
the dot .co semicolon quotation mark domain name, because that's just right in a line there.
Okay, let's drop the C. Let's just do OM.
You know,
so it'd be OM. Everything would end in OM. So like JB OM. I like that.
How about make it even easier? Dot homero. So dot ASDF.
Boom. Yeah. Or dot okay. QWERTY. Dot QWERTY, yeah. And you don't have to hit enter. The browser just recognizes.
As soon as you hit the Y, off it goes.
All right. Well, thanks to GoDaddy for supporting the Linux Action Show. And one last plug is LinuxCO1 for your checkout code.
Fantastic.
All right, Brian. I'm going to be honest. I actually haven't told people about this Android pick for very selfish reasons. Here, I'm bringing up, I've got a VNC running here. Oh, no. It crashed. I had VNC running on my Evo. It does that.
The VNC server crash on Android.
When it goes to sleep sometimes, if you leave it sleeping for too long, you know what I mean? I'll see if I can fire it up so I can show you.
Get that up and rocking, because we got to see that.
I hadn't been showing people this because I was kind of being selfish, because I've always wanted to restart up the Radio Revolver show that I used to do, you know, way back in the day. And that featured old-time radio classics that then I'd, you know, kind of remaster and throw into a podcast feed, and then the folks commuting or something like that could listen to some old theater while they drove around.
My favorite shows we ever did, by the way.
Well, thanks. And
these other shows we do with all these videos and these high def and the production values, total garbage.
Right.
I liked the one where you just sat around, you talked for like 2 minutes about whatever, and then listened to an old episode of like The Shadow.
I had jazz hands when I did it. It was awesome. I mean,
I love jazz hands.
Now, what I'm talking about is an app called Old Time Radio Player on the Android Marketplace. It's free. And I don't know if they pull from archive.org or what, but they index and pull down rights-free old-time classic radio dramas, like all of the good ones, and they categorize it like adventure, comedy, science fiction. And so just before here on the pre-show, I'd gone in and I'd grabbed Dimension X, for example. And what's cool about this is it just goes and starts downloading it right away, so you can be like on the road, stuck in traffic, and you'll be like, well, you know, I'm awfully bored. I wouldn't mind being able to just listen to something right now because there's nothing ever good on the radio. So you just fire this app up wherever you're at, and it just starts downloading an old-time radio program right there. Bob's Your Uncle.
Snap. Snap. Yeah. Lickety-split.
So it's free, of course. And that's, again, that's called Old Time Radio Player, and I'll put a link in the show notes. And then I wanted to be a nice guy and encourage people, if you're out there and you make an app and it's semi-decent, send it my way so I can talk about it. Because why not feature community
if
apps, right?
If you make an app and it is intentionally total crap, don't send it to Chris. Yeah.
I don't want to have to rag on it on the air, you know what I mean?
He doesn't want to have to do that, guys.
Yeah.
He does not want to have to do that. But
I'm going to say what I got to say, Brian. If I got to say it's bad, I'm going to say it's bad.
This
OTR
player, though, is the bee's knees. So that's the good stuff.
A little
stuff
crashy
right
sometimes, but once you get it going, it's fine. I think it's dependent on the feeds. But one quick shout-out to a viewer of the show, Michael Hart. And if you go search the Android Marketplace for Michael Hart, he's got a bunch of apps in there that are free, and they're just real cool, handy stuff, like an HTML reference guide, PHP reference guide, a loan calculator guide. You know, some that aren't free, but most are all free. Just cool little reference stuff. So if you're like, oh, I got to figure out how to do this thing in PHP, sure, you could Google it, or you could go and just look up through things and hit a thing and then get it.
You
kinda
know,
handy.
Now that I'm thinking about it, maybe we got a whole new idea for a show.
You think so?
People find the worst Android apps they can find and send them into you, and you make merciless fun of them for an entire half hour.
That's just, there's just not enough show. I don't know if you've looked in the Android market, but I
don't know. There's some pretty bad apps in there, man.
That's what I'm saying. There would be not enough show. I mean, you'd have to be a 24/7 stream almost, because I'm seriously, like, last night I was trying to decide if I wanted to do this old time radio one, because I always have the fantasy that I'll start up Radio Revolver again, and then I'm kind of giving away like my competition. But I don't think that's ever going to happen. Just, you know, timing and whatnot. But I was just digging around to see if there was something else I thought would be a good app too. Sort of spice up the pot. So much crap. So much.
So much.
It seems like there's more crap now than when I first got. Well, I'm sure that's the case.
Well, it's getting bigger.
Yeah.
You get one good app, you get, you know, 50 terrible ones. That's how it works.
And then
you take
and
the
then,
good with the bad, the baby with the bath
and
water.
What I'm noticing in the Android marketplace,
the pineapple on the pizza. That's
is
how
like
it goes.
You get like one or two successful apps in there, and then they once they've been successful for a little while, they immediately get clones that are just total ripoffs. So kind of poo. So that's why when I see a good one, I want to feature it. And so if you're a developer out there too, let's give you a shot and feature it on the show as well. You know what
that's
I mean?
Great idea.
I agree, B-Man. All right, Brian. Let's do the news.
What's new in the news this week?
All right, Brian. Our top story on the news docket for this week. The Joint DEX Task Force has been announced.
DEX.
DEX. This is actually a really cool idea.
It's a good idea. Very, very good
idea. With a very cool name.
What does the name actually mean?
I don't know exactly what the name means.
All in caps. But basically, the idea is simple. Since all these distributions and all these projects rely on Debian, let's go ahead and form they call it a task force, which makes it sound more awesome. So I like it. So I'm going to call them a task force also. A task force to make sure
Debian extended Mike's suggestion chair. And I think that's what it was.
Total sense.
Yep, yep.
That actually makes sure that a lot of the great stuff happening downstream makes it back upstream.
And that's the key thing, downstream stuff.
Yeah,
downstream stuff.
Super, super key. So the big thing is the CTO of Canonical working on Ubuntu is like, all right, we're doing all this stuff in Ubuntu. Let's make sure changes we make are making it back upstream into Debian, and then that we pull again from Debian to get all those changes. So that way everyone's benefiting.
And the joint part
in the development and everything.
And the joint part is Debian is also assigning resources. It says here that they're starting out with Ubuntu as sort of the Ubuntu DEX team as their pilot to see how that works. And they're going to focus on merging code into Ubuntu and Debian. Both projects will be focused on this, dedicated people. And it says that they're going to try to make sure that if an improvement is made, that whatever blockers block that from getting integrated back into Debian, those blockers will be resolved directly by this DEX team if possible. So that,
which
you know,
is awesome.
It's one of the things I think they've had is they've had to rely on third parties who have other priorities to make things fixed in order to make them work back into Debian. So this is a great way to just say, we're making this official, and these are going to be these people's responsibility.
dude, it's choice. It's great. I mean, we'll see how well it works out. I bet you there's going to be all sorts of road bumps. My guess is wait about 3 months and there'll be some news story about how horrible and awful and broken it is.
Yeah, but you
and
know,
then fix it up and they'll make it better. And,
exactly.
You know, it's the whole thing. This is
the process.
This is both sides. It's Debian and Ubuntu saying, hey, we want to make sure this happens. And so let's make it official.
Right.
And they call it a task force, guys.
I like task force. I like that.
What else they use for task force? Taking out terrorists.
Yeah.
overthrowing dictators. those are things you use task force.
Dude, we should refer to ourselves as the Linux Action Show Task Force.
Also for making sure code gets back into Debian upstream.
Apparently.
So those are things you use task force.
Yeah, apparently. I think it's great. And hey, it's maybe that's what open source is all about. So
that's all I got.
Cool. All right, now this next one, at first I kind of snickered a little bit. I kind of went, oh, this is so misguided. But then I thought, maybe this will save us all. The XDE project has been announced, and its intention is to keep the GNOME 2.0 that we know and love flames going. And I don't think they're just sticking with like the older GTK and stuff like that, but they're essentially it's a branch off that's not going to be a GNOME shell group. And right. It doesn't sound like they're just going to replace the shell. They're actually going to keep the whole current desktop environment based on Metacity or Metacity going, all that. So it's, you know, it's a full fork, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we'll see. There's been a lot of forks off of GNOME before in the past. So,
and you know, KDE,
almost all of them have just stopped because most of the time they end up not being all that necessary. So we'll see what happens. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, there's one.
It might work. I mean, KDE did this. There's a group out there that's kept the KDE 3 alive. They've slowed down, but they're still alive.
That's the thing is they've slowed down considerably. Over time. And the big thing with keeping KDE 3 alive, or KDE 2.3 and whatnot, or KDE 3, was, I'm thinking, I'm mixing my GNOME and KDE version numbers already.
I know, right?
That KDE 4 wasn't ready. It didn't have all the features. It didn't have all the customizability of the previous generation KDE.
You're going to be able to make that argument about GNOME 3 for sure. I mean,
the thing with GNOME 3 is it's a whole different thing. It's not just that, you know, all the customization options aren't there and the like. It's that it's a whole different paradigm, a whole different style. And you could say that about KDE 4, but really you can make KDE 4 emulate the look and feel and the style of the old KDE with a fair bit of work. Whereas GNOME 3, not so much. So I'm kind of looking at this and saying, you know, maybe there is a need for a branch of GNOME to keep the GNOME 2 branch alive and the GNOME 2 experience going.
Wouldn't it just...
I prefer it as a desktop metaphor.
Well, let me ask you this. Wouldn't it just take, like... Sled or Red Hat Enterprise Desktop coming along and saying, you know what, we're going to put some weight behind this because for our customers, we want to keep this desktop around.
Right.
Wouldn't it just take a big boy to come around and throw some weight behind this and then it's kind of set?
Yeah.
Possibly, right? So it's interesting to watch to see what happens.
Yeah, no, it's true. Now, the flip side is, I mean, the old style GNOME interface isn't gone. GNOME Shell 3, GNOME 3, the shell, does have the ability to fall back to the old style UI.
Right.
So the argument could be made of, well, this just isn't necessary. But on the flip side, the GNOME team, their focus is not that old UI, that old.
Yeah, it's going to eventually fall by the wayside just as they progress.
Right. So I do like a team of people coming together and saying, hey, we want to focus on this. So that's pretty cool. Who knows what will happen with it. But if you're interested in that, the EXDE project, which is a nice name, the X Desktop Environment,
I
go ahead and check it out. You know, dive in and help out if that so floats your boat in that particular way.
I mean, if they get something, you know, in a form that I can load it on a machine, like some sort of repo that I can pull from or something like that, I'd check it out.
Right. Yeah, I would too.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, this next story is just kind of a service announcement in an effect, I suppose. So over this last week, a bit of a ruckus came up regarding Linux and Google in general. You had possible copyright infringement stuff coming up now regarding Android and some of the Linux technology in there when you actually get more down to the core of Android. Yesterday, this came out on March 18th, and yesterday news broke that Android might have a Linux copyright problem, which would be big trouble for Google, obviously, and they're already in an IP struggle with Oracle over all of that. But if you actually dig a little deeper into this story, it sounds like the person that's really making these accusations, Florian Mueller, I don't remember his, I don't know the exact pronunciation, but we just recently had a story on here where he was also trying to stir up some trouble, and he pointed to all of this Google source code that really showed that it was an issue, and then you're like, you find out, wait a minute, and he's still just talking about headers, and headers are maybe not even necessarily copyrightable, and you go in, you dig into it, and it sounds a little more flaky. He's got ex-Microsoft ties. He's tried to sue Google before. All it's right, like all right. of these things.
I'll put a few things out there. One,
lay it on me, B-man.
This does look super, super shaky. Two, I have ex-Microsoft ties. You know what?
Right, but
at least a good half of the people that are open source developers and Linux developers have ex-Microsoft ties.
I guess the
Microsoft hires like a billion people.
But listen, here's the difference is when you work with Microsoft on legal IP stuff. Against their competitors. I mean, this is his bag, right? And
that's
also,
true.
He's not a copyright claim holder. He's just looking at this stuff and putting it out there. No actual copyright holder has come forward with a grievance. So, it's really a story out of nothing. And the reason why I think a lot of these articles are bringing up the Microsoft ties is specifically because this is kind of his area, his previous past is doing this kind of stuff. So it just, I don't know. You almost wonder if a guy like this, if this is his way of putting a resume out there for a crazy mad dog like Larry Ellison, who just wants to sue like crazy.
Yeah.
And so you go,
don't,
you're like,
don't hire me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Maybe that's what this is.
His portfolio. Yeah.
Right. Look at me. I can generate some PR about your case. I can do this stuff. I have a history of it, and it just seems like that. I just thought I wanted to make it like a PSA that we're monitoring the story, but right now it looks like the Android, Google copyright infringement looks like it's a BS story so far.
Yeah, it looks like nothing.
But we'll see, right?
Not even worth following.
Let's talk about something that has been kind of interesting to follow, and that's the whole Qt and Digya or Digya or whatever it is.
Digya.
Remember
Digya
last?
Digya seems like the most obvious.
Yeah. You remember last week we covered that Nokia had sold off their interest in Qt to Digya, and boy, did Nokia get some blowback over that. And so they addressed it in a blog post, and the LinuxWeekly.net guys did a really good summary of a very long blog post that actually only had about five things that were actually worth noting. Really.
Yeah. Really long blog post.
And so I thought we'd call out a couple of these, and B-Man, let's kick these around. So first of all, let's throw this out there. These are from Nokia's blog. He says, there's an estimated 400,000 developers across more than 70 industries that are using Qt.
That is insane.
That's a lot.
That is a huge amount of developers. But on the flip side, there are only 3,500 commercial customers. Now, technically, some of those customers could be, you know, big firms. They could be HPs and IBMs and
they probably are. Dev shops and whatnot.
But it does seem like, maybe it's just me, but 3,500 seems like a small number.
Well, you're talking a conversion at 400,000 estimated users, and you only get 3,500 paying out of that?
Right, commercial paying customers.
So that's what Nokia was saying
though many of them have, you know, multiple licenses, so those are just the individual commercial entities that are paying customers.
They could have bought 1,000 licenses.
Dozens and dozens and dozens of licenses in there, and we don't know. So that is kind of interesting. One of the other tidbits that really is worth driving home is that it's just really the support of those commercial customers that is being transferred over to Digya.
Right.
Nokia is making it very clear that they have a vested interest in Qt and will continue Qt development and R&D work going forward.
They're holding on to the copyright and everything. I mean, they're not
laying off Qt staff. It doesn't look like. I mean, they're keeping it going. So
no,
so this is definitely in their vested interest.
Now let's talk about why we need Qt to keep going, right, man? Because that's our buddy Migo here, and there's been a Migo actual netbook has shipped. I don't know if you can actually get your hands on it yet in the States, but if you're outside the U.S., you might be able to. It's called the Lifebook, the Migo Lifebook, and I don't know.
Cool.
I mean,
looks like a decent little.
It does. It's. I don't know. I've heard bad things. I've heard really bad things. But it's from Fujitsu. It's the MH3300. It's got an Intel Atom processor in it. The only issue is that I've heard that it's really rough. I guess this unit was at CES, and the people that got their hands on it at CES just did not walk away with a good impression. That said, I would think if you want to get your hands on Migo and start developing, this is probably
Then again, I mean, you can put Migo, at least the phone edition, on an N900 officially now, which is, so if you've got a handset, if you've got an N900 sitting around, you can start doing a handset development on Migo now. The thing is, really, what is the future here of Migo anyway? You know, everyone it still is in doubt in my mind when we've got so many mobile platforms and going on. I used to be a big proponent of Mego. I'm kind of sitting back, and I'm not even doing a whole lot of work on Mego myself right now.
Yeah, so you know, the issue is, we have somebody in the chat room right now who says I've had Mego for over a year on my netbook, because you know there's been different spins you can get, and what the feedback that I read at CES, and I think Engadget had a pretty good article on this. So they had hands-on photos and stuff. They seem like they're doing the Android thing. They've customized the UI, and they've tried to put in like your social networks and stuff like that. And that software just sucks. Yeah, you know, it just sucks. So
yeah, and now how many different revisions of Mego do you want to have out there? As a developer, you hit the Android problem where everything's all fragmented. I don't really want that. And why get fragmented from the start?
Before
the Philippines gets a netbook, even you already are fragmented.
Annoying. Did you get a chance to try to put Mego on that?
Yes.
How did that go?
Actually, I have, and we'll be doing a full review of Mego on that.
So are you still kicking it? You're still running it?
Still running it.
Should we do that next week, or will it be too soon?
Well, we could do it next week. Next week, I want to give it a little bit more time, because honestly, I've had it running for over a week now.
Yeah.
I haven't had a lot of time to use it as an actual phone, which works. So I wanted to wait until I've had some real time to have hands-on with it. But
cool.
It is working, and you can get it. You can get developer images now that are sanctioned. And when they say developer images, it's really, the idea is that it's fully end-to-end functional. If you go over to Mego.org or Mego.com or Mamo.org, you can find links for how to install it. It's a fairly painless process if you've reflashed an N900 or an 810 or any of those devices in the past. And
no upgrade route, obviously, right?
You're hosing your whole little thing. If you do this, your N900 is going to lose everything on it. So just deal with that. But it works pretty great.
I think it's pretty neat that you can even do it in the first place, considering, you know, that it's, I mean, some companies I think we might not name would just make you buy new hardware.
That's good. And there will be a new N910 or 950.
I wonder if there's going to be any kind of hardware they're going to hand out or let people get their hands on at the Mego conference in San Francisco on May 23rd and the 25th. Boy, if I had all the time in the world, and
I'd love to get down there.
Oh man, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, I'd love to get down there, because in my mind, the San Francisco conference, which, you know, is again in the end of May, is really going to be kind of a make or break point, because if not a lot of people turn out, if, you know, there's just not a lot of interest, Mego's dead in the water.
Right.
But if people flooded, well, then there's going to be a renewed interest. There's going to be a surge of third-party software hitting the Mego marketplaces, and that's really cool. So May is going to be kind of a make-or-break moment for Mego, which is kind of cool.
Now, this next story is a fun one, because it's kind of tongue-in-cheek in a sense. The headline is as follows. OpenSUSE skills, great for getting a job. And why I find this funny is the person who wrote it, he works for Canonical, and like in their server division. He's like their...
Well, hold on a second.
Nicholas, on his blog here?
Was he the guy that wrote that, or did I put that in there here?
No, he wrote it. I checked him out.
That was my headline. He was talking about a steady increase.
I realize. But the blog that you linked to, he's a Canonical server dev guy. He's the Ubuntu server product manager. And so I thought it was funny that what this blog actually calls out is that both OpenSUSE and Ubuntu are becoming increasingly more hireable skills. He did some job trend searches and stuff like that, and you can see both SUSE has a strong lead, and so does Ubuntu in what people are looking for when they're looking for a new hire. And he had a striking growth chart of what an accelerated rate that people are looking for folks with Ubuntu skills when they're hiring for Linux positions. I personally have noticed a lot of Ubuntu systems deployed as servers. A lot of hosting places now offer that. So it's interesting to see both of these skyrocket. I don't think there's a lot you can derive from this as the overall industry trend, other than you're starting to see Ubuntu make its way into the official server world. In fact, it's jobs that are seeking Ubuntu skills are now outpacing by a fair margin jobs that are seeking Debian skills.
Yeah. And the what's worth noting here, though, is between Debian, Ubuntu, and SUSE, nothing's really dropping all that much. SUSE's, you know, doing up and down, but overall the trend is up.
Staying up.
And Debian's pretty flat, and Ubuntu's up. So really, it just Linux across the board jobs continue to be increasing. But if you're looking to get work and you want to have the best chance, right now it looks like SUSE skills are the most valuable skills to have, which is interesting to me. I honestly would have thought it would have been Fedora skills and then maybe Debian skills in the corporate world, but SUSE skills are just rocking it. So
we'll see how it
holds true. If you go and look on the job boards and start searching around for SUSE and Debian and Ubuntu and Fedora, you find an amazingly high amount of SUSE skills.
Yes.
And it's amazing. On my own personal resume, I don't usually think to list individual distributions.
No, I don't either.
Linux, you know, Linux. I just call it. I'm like, well, I know Linux, so that covers it. You know, whatever distro is fun.
I on occasion will put enterprise distributions that I've worked on just because I figure maybe for that position or something, but no.
What's worth to note is a lot of these headhunters, a lot of the HR personnel from these companies, and even the hiring managers are doing just searches on specific distros when they're looking to hire new individuals. So if you've got skills,
put it on there.
Specific distros in there.
It's like tagging your blog post.
Seriously.
Well, I think about how that probably happens. So you've got an existing IT shop. The hiring manager, the HR person or the boss goes to the tech person and says, all right, so we're going to hire you that extra help that we told you we'd get as soon as we made a little more money. What does a person need to have in order to help do your job? And the guy's going to go there. He's going to go, well, we run Apache, and we've got an Ubuntu file server, and we got this. And he's going to list the stuff, and then that hiring person is going to go, all right, well, they need to have this, this, and this, and this is just what they're going to go hire.
Yep.
So it's sort of a grassroots thing, but it makes sense to me. Now, one more kind of interesting story before we go into a rapid fire of news stories, and that is NASA is hosting their first open source summit in California.
Awesome.
I didn't even know that NASA did this kind of thing, and it's brand new. Coming
Which
up,
which explains why you didn't know NASA did that kind of thing.
I didn't even know they were interested in it. But coming up on March 29th through the 30th, down in California somewhere.
Well, NASA's always been a really big Fedora shop. I mean, they run a lot of stuff on Fedora and have for years. So it really makes sense that they're getting behind it, and the more benefit they can push, the more innovation they can push in open source benefits them directly.
I think their use of open source, you know, and this happens in government, they've run into some kind of issues, because this is what it's worded. NASA's first open source summit will bring together engineers, policymakers, and members of the open source community. Participants will discuss the challenges within existing open source policy framework and propose modifications to facilitate NASA's development and release and use of the software.
Awesome.
So it sounds like maybe there's some things that they have concerns about in order to be able to adopt it.
Then they follow
this up, which I think is almost, you should almost go to the show notes and grab this quote if you ever want to convince a client or a boss to deploy Linux, because I think NASA just made the case for you right here. It says, open source brings numerous benefits to NASA software projects, including increased quality, reduced development costs, faster development cycles, and reduced barriers for public-private collaboration to commercialize agency technology. And this is coming from NASA's Chief Technology Officer for Information Technology, Chris Kemp. He says the full benefits of open source can only be achieved if NASA is able to establish the process, policies, and cultures needed to encourage and support open source development.
Seriously.
Wow. The guy gets why open source is valuable, and the guy gets what they have to do to participate in a community to invest.
That's basically use open source.
Use open source, and it gives you increased quality, reduce your costs, and gives you faster development cycle, and reduces barriers for collaboration. That's what the chief technology officer of NASA said.
Hey guys, remember how we sent people to the moon?
Yeah,
you should use open source software.
We're experts on stuff.
I mean, seriously, if NASA says you're supposed to use a particular type of technology, you drop whatever you're doing and you use that damn technology, because they're NASA. That's just the end of the entire discussion right
there. We are both big fans of, what's the orange stuff that we drink all the time?
Tang.
Tang in the summer. I've always got a thing of Tang in my cupboard.
Space orange juice, man.
Space orange juice, dude.
That's all good right, stuff.
Let's rapid fire through a couple of these. What do you think? See what we got?
Ready.
This next story is a pretty cool one. So this the Open University, which is a fully accredited online university based out of the UK, really cool, is offering the LPI certification and the Linux Plus certifications now out of their online courses. You can go over there and get college credits and get certified in Linux, taking, like, for example, the CompTIA Linux Plus certification, which is a LPI certified certification. Boy, that's a lot of certifies.
That's and, a lot of certifies.
Once you complete that, you will be considered CompTIA Linux Plus certification. Now, we talk on and off about certifications from time
what
to time.
What does that get you?
Linux Plus is kind of like getting an A plus only in Linux, but it at least puts a flag in the ground that says, I know my basic Linux, and you can get it through an online course, which is awesome.
Totally. Awesome. Totally. So if you're looking to, you know, especially if you're just starting out, you need to get some stuff on your resume that says, hey, I'm a Linux pro. That's a good way to go. These certifications aren't terribly expensive compared to getting, especially compared to getting like a bachelor's or a PhD or a... a space doctorate or whatever the heck they do at colleges nowadays. I don't even know. You might as well.
Look at them being bold, though. All right. Next thing on the rapid fire news is OpenShot 1.3.0 came out a few weeks ago. I didn't get a chance to fit it in, but I just wanted to talk about it because this is a project that I watch closely because I'm always, always hoping to jump on using OpenShot, and it gets closer and closer. A couple of things that I like quite a bit. It's got a new user interface theme, which I'll show here in just a second. Also has direct video upload to YouTube and Vimeo, as well as new timeline animation and improved transitions. But the new UI is kind of schmexy. I kind of dig the new UI. Yeah, yeah. I'm showing a screenshot here on the video version, and it's looking pretty sweet. It's looking very polished. So OpenShot 1.3.0 is out, and I'll have a link in the show notes for that. And then one thing that we just don't really get to talk about as much as I would like is backup and how to backup right under Linux. One of my favorite open source backup projects, which really seems to strike the median between really difficult but super advanced and easy to use. It's got a few things you got to do when you set it up, but once it's set up, it's all a web UI. It has incredible storage management. I mean, you will be amazed at the way this thing can efficiently handle storage by never backing up duplicate files. It does some really smart hard links and stuff like that. A backup PC, and the reason why I'm talking about it today is LinuxJournal.com just did a write-up on backup PC, and it's just a great, great piece of software, so check that out. And then the last story on the rapid news fire segment is Linux kernel 2.6.3.8 has been released, and the reason why this one has me excited is other than that handy patch that's now built in that makes everything
it
so
has
much
support
better.
Support for Batman.
Batman protocol is built in, and that's a real thing, B-Man. The Batman Mesh Network Protocol, which helps provide network connectivity in the presence of a natural disaster or military conflicts such as internet censorship.
It has support for Batman.
The Batman protocol, yeah. But can I just...
I don't even care what it does.
Oh, it's really cool, I'll tell you.
It has support for Batman.
But it's a hot topic right now because, you know, they've been shutting down the internet in different companies. And I've often thought, or different countries, and I've thought it would be a great way if we could build in some sort of decentralized mechanism for discovery and things like that. And it's what Batman stands for is let me make sure I'm not just doing it from memory. The better approach to mobile ad hoc networking. It's a combination, I believe, of like a mesh routing protocol and a mesh name resolution protocol, or you can at least run one over that.
That the Batman logo is all in ASCII art. So if you look up the Batman protocol on Wikipedia or something there, you will see it all in ASCII art, and that is glorious.
That is glorious. So the Batman protocol might just save us all from government censorship one day, and it is now, as of Linux kernel 2.6.3.8, coming baked right into your desktop.
Fantastic.
So when the government strikes us down, your Linux machine is already ready. Just like we were ready years before, or a year before the first USB 3.0 device shipped, we are now ready for the year 2012 when all hell breaks loose, at least for a couple days until we're crushed.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's going to save us from 2012. Yeah,
well, at least for maybe the first couple hours.
I don't think so.
I just need enough time to get the Linux Action Show posted, depending
on
how.
The only way to survive 2012 is if you have giant ships that can withstand a lot of water.
What if I got an airplane? Can I make
There's
it at least for a little
that.
While? Because
you can outrun outrun the volcanoes for a little bit
and earthquakes.
You have a small
and
enough airplane.
Yeah, no, and earthquakes true. And yeah. So
I'm pretty confident that the only way that Linux is going to survive 2012 is with the John Cusack protocol.
Right.
We're going to need to implement that. Yeah. I'm going to leave it up to the chat room to figure out what exactly that stands for, though,
and make a great acronym for it too. That's at least as good as Batman. Because you really can't beat a Batman when it comes to technology acronyms. You're not beating Batman. Unless you're really good.
You're not beating Batman.
All right, Brian. Well, that's all the news for this week.
We've done a number of different server reviews here over the years. In fact, I've still got an HP Media Vault Linux-powered server over here running next to me. Fantastic little device.
Yeah, we like
and
that
And we've talked about building your own home server based on a variety of different distros. We've talked about Drobos and Drobo-powered awesomeness. There's a lot of different ways to have a home server. We've got a new one sitting here, and it looks pretty cool. A nice little Linux-powered box by Excito that is a great name for a corporation. Therefore, we want to review this product. So Chris has been running this for a little while now.
Yeah. I've had my hands on it for a couple
main
weeks.
Kind of media little machine, mm-hmm. your storage box.
Yeah, you remember, a season ago, we did that build your home. We did like a two-part episode, build your own Linux home server, and this replaced that. And this is the B3, the B3 from Excito, and it's just a little,
Is it
guy.
Is really called the Bubba?
I don't know if that's his internal product name or if that's his actual, like, official name, but it's just a little unit. It's about the size of an external hard drive. You know what I mean?
Really?
And so it's actually no larger, really, than an external USB or FireWire hard drive. And I want to say something, because you know what, B-Man? This is probably going to be a primarily positive review. But here's the thing. I didn't get paid to review this. I didn't even get, like, I think they're in Switzerland or something. I didn't even get, like, Swiss chocolate. Nothing. I just happen to really like Linux stuff and get excited about good Linux stuff. So if this does come off as kind of a positive review, I didn't get paid for it. I just happen to like the product so far.
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
I believe you.
Thank you, sir. I wanted to make that disclaimer because I hate it when people claim that. I mean, if I got paid to, I'd never do that. I mean, I'd love that, but I'd never actually do it. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. All right, let's talk about what it is.
I would tell companies that I would give them a positive review if they give me money, but then I won't. So just so you know, all companies out there, I will say anything about your product for $10 million.
Oh, well, I mean, sure.
And right now you can't see it under my sunglasses, but I'm winking.
I'm
a little winky face right now.
You know what I'll do? If I get $10 million to review a product, I'll put a big lower third on there with lots of fancy graphics as soon as I got paid because I could afford to do that. That's what I would do. Let's talk about the details of this guy. It's, like I said, it's small. It's got 2 gigabit Ethernet ports on there, one for your WAN and one for your LAN. And
that's
it's got
cool.
2 USB ports and an eSATA port. And so that's probably a good place to start is this thing can be as much or as little as you want. It can actually replace your router. And if you do that, then it handles all of the firewall management for you automatically. Like if you decide you want to open up a photo gallery to the world, check a box. It makes the firewall rule exceptions, and now you're published. And along with that, they include built into the software a little service that lets you automatically update your dynamic address and through their own name resolution, so you don't have to go buy a domain name or anything like that. They just will do a little heartbeat thing. It's really kind of slick like that. In fact, why don't I'll bring it up here. So when you bring it onto the network, I brought it in as my router, and the first thing I noticed is right out of the box, I was able to browse the web. I was able to get out to the net. It acts as my local DNS server. I just plugged everything in and opened up my web browser, and I was browsing the web. And if you're watching the video version right now, I'm showing the admin page. And it's a really nice, easy-to-use page where if you just want to give users the ability to look at files or maybe look at photos, you can do that right through this web page, remote or local. And it's got a nice PHP or some sort of non-flash-based file browser, so you can jump around and look at stuff through their web page. And when you're ready to administer it, as long as you've got the right permissions levels, you can go right into their screen, super easy to use administration page. So slam dunk. I never ever got hung up on anything in here. You know, nice Ajaxy toggle buttons for stuff, and real time hit update and stuff happens right away. You know, I mean, just real nice, smooth, real polished as you'd expect maybe like a really, really super high end home router to have. But then add in things like file services and even email services. It can be your own home email server, which is really cool. Or it can be a home print server, and out of the box, it's a Samba server. What's really fun, if you're a Linux geek, though, is this is Debian Squeeze under the hood.
Really?
So you can SSH into it, and when you create a user, you add a user to the system, and you just check a box, and you say, give this user shell login, and then you can open up an SSH connection to the B3 server, and you can jump into the command line and start apt-getting. Which is exactly what I did. I SSH'd in. I apt-get installed something called, I'm blanking on the name. It's like Zone Manager, I think is what it's called. I'll try to get the name for the show notes. And what it is it is a networked camera capture software. Because my dad got me like one of those little, you know, wireless, see in the dark, remotely controllable cameras with two-way audio. But I'd just been sitting on my shelf because I didn't really have time to do anything with it. So I set it up. Then I apt-get a distance software on the B3, and it pulls down and saves the images right to the photo gallery on the B3. So then I just go to the B3's page, and I can look at the photo gallery anytime there's been movement. So that's really awesome. Slick. The other thing is this does have a lot of features, like it can be a DAP audio streaming client or server for Rhythmbox or Banshee or iTunes. So you can throw all your music in the music folder, and then it shares out that way. I don't really prefer to use that because I like to be able to more manage my playlists and stuff like that. So I just use it as a Samba server for that. The other thing that I thought it would just show up as a media streamer to like my PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360.
Yeah.
It didn't.
Not right out of the box anyway. I mean, I'm assuming you could apt-get the software to do it.
I just apt-getted MediaTomb and, you know, I was done.
There you go.
It was super easy. And I don't know why, but MediaTomb was actually already configured to look at all of the correct paths for where all my media was. So I don't know if they'd maybe done that already. I didn't look beforehand, but
or maybe all the stuff was in the right folders by default.
Yeah, it was super easy. Luckily, so it was not a challenge. Here's some of the fun parts. So let's talk a little bit about the specs. So it can act as a torrent server too. So you can just drop a torrent on there and it'll start going. This is the B3 I looked at, and so there are some features that the older one, the 2, doesn't have. But for the most part, I guess it does have MediaTomb. Maybe I already had it installed and I just installed some other stuff, and that might have been why it was configured. But it wasn't started by default.
You know, just reinstalled MediaTomb.
I don't think so though. But yeah. So it, and like I said, it can act as a router. It also comes with 802.11 antennas, so it can be your Wi-Fi access point as well. Good strong signal out of this thing. It's a DHCP server, obviously. And here's the interesting thing: is you can get up to 2 terabytes of storage built in. And remember, this thing's the size of a little USB external hard drive. Not a little one, but a standard, you know, 3.5-inch hard drive. It's really no bigger than an enclosure. It's got a 1.2 gigahertz ARM processor.
That's awesome.
It's super, super low power. I ran a kilowatt meter thing plugged into this thing the entire time I used it. I don't think I ever saw above 16 watts of usage when I was copying all of my media onto it.
Hardcore.
I think on average I saw around 14 watts of power that this thing drew. So we're talking, you know, low power, less than a light bulb, and completely silent except for an occasional hard drive click, but like, you know, totally reasonable. So I had it right next to me on my desk, like I would an external drive, sitting there this whole time. Put my hand on a few times. It was warm but not hot. It was not loud. Really, really compared to the home server that I built before, that I, you know, had a lot of fun with. But that's a big box with a lot of loud fans, and I kind of just replaced all of that sucker's functionality with this little tiny unit.
Now, what about it's got USB on the back, it's got eSATA on the back, which is way cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got my old Linux powered Media Vault here, but it's just got a USB port on the back. And one thing that kind of stinks about, you know, some of the NAS devices like what I've got is if I plug in an extra USB device, an extra USB hard drive, or even just a Drobo into it, it creates a new share. I'm creating a brand new share. I'm not really expanding my existing storage pool. So, but it looks like this device could do that. I mean, it could combine multiple drives into a single, like, virtual
they
volumes.
Do, I think they sell, like, an add-on drive that sort of matches the look and feel of it, and it's an eSATA drive. I didn't, just as a disclaimer, I did not do this, but I was looking in, because that's, B-Man, you touched on one of my big things, is I need to be able to just roll more storage in as I go, because I'm always adding stuff.
Right.
And they use LVM throughout the system, and from what I can tell. And they have a really easy-to-use admin interface. In fact, let me see if I can just... I'll just browse over there and see if we can find it. And a nice, easy-to-use wrapper right on top of LVM. So you can go into the disk administration section on the B3 server, and then you can go into LVM. And when you add more storage, you can choose to just extend the home partition, which is where all of the media files are stored. There's a folder on the root of home. You can choose to just extend the home partition with whatever new volume you add, and it on the back end increases the LVM volume size to now span over that new drive.
That is three different kinds of awesome.
Real easy to use, right? And then it also...
LVM is fantastic, but that's one of the big issues with LVM is a lot of times it can be a real pain to get working quite right. You know, there's some good UIs for it, but
if you're using
times,
the command line, it's so hectic when you're messing with stuff like that because you're worried about deleting something.
It makes you freaked out that you're going to screw up everything.
Yeah.
But this, I mean, come on. There's just a drop-down box and a button.
The other thing
I can do that when I'm half drunk. That's perfect.
a lot of things these other ones don't have is RAID on any volume you hook up. This thing supports managing software RAID if the hardware you hook up to it doesn't offer hardware RAID. So you can hook up external drives, like I have an eSATA, like a 6 or 8 bay eSATA enclosure that I could hook up and do software RAID with this thing. So that's nice too.
That's awesome.
And again, it's just a clickety click. So like I mentioned, it does run on an ARM processor, and that's definitely a positive in terms of temperature, noise, and power usage. So overall, the ARM processor is great as a server platform. I had HD video streaming to two different machines, and plus, you know, working it as my general network file server and DHCP and DNS and all that stuff, never knows to slow down. The only gotcha with going with ARM is I really like having Dropbox on my server.
Right.
And when you go ARM, because Dropbox is proprietary, they don't bother with an ARM Linux port.
Right.
So that was out, because I couldn't install the Intel version. The other thing, you know, is I was looking at other options for media streaming, and most of them were ruled out if they didn't have ARM support. So that's something to consider. You do run into some limitations there, but as far as, you know, out-of-the-box features, that's something that it's just kind of a give and take, I think, because the
Seriously.
Overall advantages of ARM seem to outweigh it for a home server.
And the reality is, for things like Dropbox, if you have another machine running most of the time, you can have Dropbox on that machine and have it pointed with some symlinks back over to,
sure,
say, a
yeah,
mounted
yeah.
folder from your server. So that takes care of that.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
It would be awesome to have Dropbox support on there, but there are other Dropbox-like alternatives out there that you can use on an ARM-based machine. So
now, I was looking at this guy, and honestly, Brian, there are like clients that I would say, get this as your workgroup server for small offices. It's the price is a little steep, sort of. I mean, if you think about what you get, it's actually a pretty competitive product. But right now, as of this recording, it's $565 US, which is about 300 or 400
euros.
Euros. So it's kind of a spend a unit, so it's getting in the price range of a free NAS box, or I mean a ready NAS box and things like that. But
you have a small, quiet machine that you can plop down that acts as your email server and your firewall and your gateway and your storage box and everything else.
And a photo gallery and yeah, exactly.
And you've got everything else on there, so you can throw on, you know, all the various like Exchange competitors and whatnot that'll run. Those will run, a lot of them, on ARM-based machines because they're nice and open source.
Oh, yeah.
Load it all up. You're good to go. This would be a great, great small business box for that sort of thing.
I like, too, it's got so the Wi-Fi antennas on the back are the removable kind. So if you wanted to actually run this thing's Wi-Fi into a serious antenna setup, you could. It supports the 2.4 and 5 gigahertz wireless frequencies, so if you happen to be rocking all 5 gigahertz devices, you can get some good speed and range out of that.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's
awesome.
It's a great box. I would buy this. In fact, I'm gonna contact them and see if I can buy it. I'm really happy with its footprint and its noise and its power and all those things. Its features are pretty great. I'm gonna need to hook up more storage to it. That's just the facts. But you know, heck, I like it quite a bit.
That's a heck of a nice rig. And realistically, even if you go to build your own machine, if you were to build a server that used that little power in that small of an enclosure, a nice little silent rig, by the time you got all those features together, you're going to be right about that same price point anyway, and you're going to have a much larger machine.
And
so you might as well just get something pre-made that's small. I mean,
this thing, it felt geek elegant to me. Like It felt like maybe the average consumer might be slightly challenged, although again, it was everything just worked out of the box. But what I mean is, like, you know, as a geek, I appreciate that when it comes up as my router, firewall, gateway, file server, all that stuff, by default, they start up a DNS server, and in the manual it says, just go to http://b3. And you don't have to worry about if it's a 192 or a 16, it's already doing the name resolution for your network. And it just works. And when you've got a few machines on your home network, if you've got something doing automatic DNS, everything just starts working better. All the apps that auto-discover stuff on your network, they all find stuff. Your shares all auto-populate. You know, like if you're browsing around on Conker or Nautilus and sometimes your Samba workgroup won't resolve correctly and things like this, when everything's going through this box and it's a master browser for your network, it's a DNS server, all this stuff, it's just there's a certain level of automation that reaches your home network that is really nice to be able to just plug in. put the power in the socket, and then all of a sudden you just have that. It's geek elegance is what it is, you know, and it's all being done by Linux. So I just couldn't be happier with this little guy. I put some additional notes. Like, I had an issue with it didn't support my complex password, and I had a few other thoughts. Like, it has some built-in backup mechanisms, but in my opinion, and this is, you know, this is all probably still kind of down the road, but in my opinion, their backup facilities don't quite meet what my expectations are. They're just sort of basic. You can back up the server to an external medium.
Oh.
I'd like to see, you know, down the road, what would be great would be, I mean, if I could have anything I wanted, would be background syncing to like S3 or something like that. Or, to an FTP server even.
Come on, right now, man. It's running Debian, dude.
It is, actually. Yeah, I could just draw rsync on there.
Stick a couple of scripts on there and you're good to go.
Yeah. I know, but you know, if they're gonna do that, the other thing that's pretty cool is their software update screen here. Not only gets you software updates for like their B3 management platform and stuff like this, but these guys are totally rocking the whole app repo system. Nice. You're not gonna break stuff by app getting and then by doing updates through the UI as well, because I believe their built-in update mechanism, and I could be wrong, but I believe their built-in update mechanism is actually just apt. So they
built a web front-end apt.
They're utilizing the apt get system underneath to manage their own updates. So they must have like an Excito apt repo or something like that that they can pull from.
The Excito repo.
Which is totally how I would do it too, right? If I was going to make a product, I'd give myself an app repo and I could push out my own updates and stuff like that. And it still has the Debian mainline repos in there too. That's where I got some of the packages from. So it's a good way to mash it up.
Dude, this is really slick. This is a really cool device. So $500-$600... You know, that's enough to cause people pause, but mm-hmm. honestly, I've paid more for less, so this
and
is
you
not
know,
bad.
I've had this thing...
It's less expensive than most feature phones right now.
I've had this thing, you know, for a couple of weeks, and the only time I've had to, like, restart or something like that is if I want to try doing something. You know, I really just super not have to think about it kind of thing. Like, I didn't have to, like, run around and help my wife connect to stuff because, like, all of the file shares had... you know, human sane rights for a home network that just worked. And, you know, once she had an account, she was money. And after, you know, sometimes when you deploy a new Samba server, people start saving files and you realize, oh crap, I got the sticky bit wrong. And I go in there and start chmodding everybody's home directory so that way they can write to their own files. No, none of that. It just works with this guy. And here's the cool thing is, these guys are pretty into this product. And, I said, the Linux Action Show audience is going to want to know stuff that I'm just not going to be able to cover. And they're willing to get like one of their engineer type guys on here to answer any questions. So if you guys want to write in, just either tweet me at ChrisLAS, email me Chris@JupiterBroadcasting, or LinuxActionShow@JupiterBroadcasting. Send in your questions, and don't worry about being too technical, because I will field them over to those guys and either get them on the show to talk about them or at least get you answers back on the show.
Oh, that's rad. So we could literally have Mr. Excito.
Yeah.
Show.
Mr. Excito, you got to get this product on Amazon and stuff like this, because this is a great product that I really, really like encouraging people to check out. I mean,
nice.
Oh, man. And so, and by the way, I've used it from a Mac, from several Linux machines, and from a Windows 7 box. No problems. It has Apple file sharing, it has SSH, it has Samba. So whichever shake you want to take at to get to it, it's all yours.
Dude. I would love to run a BBS off one of these things.
You totally could, dude.
I would love to. I mean, I'm currently running it off a little Triple E right now.
Yeah.
But if I could run it off of a tiny little device like that, that would be pretty nice. Epic awesome. Little 100-line BBS system. They should add that to the web panel. One click, boom, your own BBS.
You know, it's funny. Instantly important. Like you started to say at the beginning of the segment here is, We've looked at the media vaults. We've looked at the Drobos with Drobo shares. We've looked at the home-built servers. And this, so far, is one of my favorites in sense that it does everything I actually need it to do without doing too much, and it does it in incredibly... I mean, 13 watts? That's ridiculous.
Crazy.
That's ridiculous,
crazy.
Right? I mean, that's like I'm not worrying about, you know, like my other server, I think, has like a 900-watt power supply in it. So that's a huge difference. And I'm getting essentially the same functionality.
All these are really important things, but really we're missing sight of the big picture.
What's that, B-Man?
The company is called Excito.
Excito. Yeah,
therefore,
you're right.
We must buy their product. And again, they aren't even paying us. I'm just saying this because they're called Excito, and that's awesome to me.
We should have gone with Excito. We should have gone.
We really should. We missed the boat with this whole Jupiter Broadcasting garbage. This hullabaloo.
I think we were around before these guys.
Saito.
So they have a couple of things. I just got the base B3 unit, but they've also got like a squeeze box server on there, and so you can get squeeze box, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
And they've got all kinds of stuff. So I got the B3 with Wi-Fi is the one I had for my review, and I used the F out of it. I eventually discontinued using it as my router because our Fios router is kind of a pain in the butt, you know. But it just is a checkbox, and now you're just acting as a regular file server. So you just disable the router mode with a single thing, didn't break all my settings, nothing like that. And then it started talking to the Fios router using Universal Plug and Play to configure its port forwarding to accommodate what it already had set up.
Nice.
Right? I mean, so I didn't even have to go mess with port forwarding on my Fios router once I made it no longer the router. I love that stuff.
Glorious.
Love that.
Glorious.
I get down, gives me time to focus on the stuff that I want to do. All right, B-Man. Well, that's our look at the B3.
And that brings us to the end of this week's broadcast. We got a lot of stuff coming up. A whole hell of a lot of stuff coming up.
Dude, we're
busy. Next week, we're going to do the Mego review on the N900.
I'm looking forward to
it. I don't know if you can really call it a review. We're going to talk about it, and we're going to do a little hands-on. We'll show it to you live with some video. It'll be pretty, pretty awesome there.
Cool.
It's not really a shipping product. It's just kind of a semi-official thing that Nokia is doing for the N900s. But you can get your first hands-on experience with Mego on a handset, which is pretty cool.
That sounds cool.
Coming up over the next couple of weeks, we got a couple of interviews coming up. We decided to talk about some of the commercial software offerings out there from some of the other various other companies, and we're going to focus on some development software. So we've got Runtime Revolution, the guys that make Live Code, are going to be coming on the show. The CEO is going to be coming on the show in
a couple of weeks.
Couple of weeks?
I think so.
And I do not have my calendar in front of me, but in the next couple of weeks, he's coming on the show. That'll be pretty cool because they make a very, very cross-platform tool set. You can even use it to make Android apps and all sorts of stuff. It's kind of a HyperCard-based development environment. Similar language type of thing. Very, very cool tool set. So they're coming on the show. They love Linux. Real Software, their CEO is coming on the show also in the next couple of weeks. They're going to talk about Real Software on Linux, why Linux is important to them, Linux, and all that sort of thing.
Why is Linux important to them? And I think that's the part people are going to find kind of interesting.
That's what I want to talk to them about. Mm-hmm. And I also want to talk to them about the technical side of things too.
Sure,
what are they supporting on Linux? You know, how do they feel about various distros? All that sort of stuff. And they're also going to bring a couple of giveaways with them. So they're going to be giving away some enterprise license.
Oh, cool.
Like that. I don't have the details on that. Of how you have to win. I don't know if people have to be naked standing on their head and all sorts of things, but it might
plan for that.
Something like that. Just plan for that. It's a good way to go. So that's pretty cool. Linux Fest Northwest is coming up soon.
Right.
And I have a special message for everyone involved
in
Linux Fest Northwest. You guys need to get back to us. Now, here's the thing.
We do need to plan.
Plan ahead here. We know there's been a lot of interest. We've sent kind of a proposal over to Linux Fest Northwest, and it's a kind of a solid proposal. We'll talk about streaming some keynotes, do some really cool stuff like that. And Linux Fest Northwest is awesome.
Yeah, we've gone for years now.
We're on a great show. We're definitely going to be there this year. But we would like to kick it up a notch, but we need you guys to get back to us. Come on, guys. Come on, guys.
It's probably scramble time for them.
Come
right?
on, it's scramble time for them. Yeah, seriously, guys, get back to us. If you're involved in the Bellingham user group up there that puts on Linux Fest Northwest, go to there. Go talk to everybody and tell them, get back to us.
Yeah.
Just email us. Send us an email. Send me an email directly. Whatever you got to do, get a hold of us.
Brian@jupiterbroadcasting.com.
That works great.
Hey, can I give a plug for an episode of Jupiter at Night I did? Or that we did?
Of course
I didn't do it
you
myself.
I could stop you.
This one, I know not everyone listens to Lass as a Jupiter at Night viewer or listener, but check this out. We brought one of our community members in the chat room, Marsbase, who is awesome and is a big space enthusiast, and I can't really say what she does, but let's just say NASA. And she came on and talked to us about the actual current searches that we are doing in the solar system for signs of life. And if you're interested in, now we're talking real stuff, like bacteria maybe in frozen water and things like that. All of the kind of major efforts that are underway right now, we sort of recapped a lot of them in that episode of Jupiter Night. And that's Searching for Life and Soul, and that came out on the 16th. I don't know, just go to Jupiter Broadcasting and check that out if that's up your
alley.
That's
awesome.
Yeah.
That's way awesome.
I like that one.
Way, way awesome.
Man. Is there anything else we should cover?
Of course. About a month from now, we've got the new Ubuntu release hitting.
Yeah.
So we've got Fedora coming up. Yeah. We've got a lot of new releases hitting. So this is going to be a very busy next month and a half or so. But we've got a lot of stuff, crazy stuff going on. Again, though, if you want to win copies of Real Studio, you're probably going to have to be naked sand on your head. That's the important takeaway from all of this information that we just gave you.
I think so. Probably out of the whole last hour of programming, that's the important bit.
That's the takeaway.
All right, B-Man. Just a quick shout-out to the Jupiter Colony over there. Go to jupitercolony.com. There's a section in there for Linux Action Show. And I always am trolling that, and so is everybody else. You can go in there and find great conversations of everything Linux-related. Also a great place to bring something to our attention if you want to see it worked into the show. And then, of course, there's the Facebook page over at facebook.com/JupiterBroadcasting. See how it's all kind of Jupiter Broadcasting? It all kind of makes sense.
It's fantastic.
That's where we post things about new episode releases, when we're going live, stuff like that.
Wow.
All right, B-Man. Wow, that's one heck of an episode.
Are we done?
Okay, everyone. I think so. I think that just about wraps up this episode of the Linux Action Show. Brian's out here.
I was going to leave, but my chair is kind of broken, actually.
Oh.
Like I start to leave.
That was going
to
be a great
exit.
And
my chair started falling, and I'm like, well, instead, I'm just going to come on back.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought you were doing a nice epic exit there.
Let's end the show anyway.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much for watching, and we'll see you next Sunday. Everyone, it's Chris here with just a last-minute update I wanted to fit into the show. I wanted to say thanks to all of you who contributed. A couple of weeks ago, we made the call that we're going to go full-time with Jupiter Broadcasting. We're making the push, and thanks to a lot of your generous efforts, we've been able to reach 15% of our monthly expenses. It's not huge, but it's a good start, and if you'd be interested in contributing, please visit jupiterbroadcasting.com/donate. We are also interested in speaking with possible advertisers. We've got a advertising page set up over at jupiterbroadcasting.com. Up in the top, you can click an advertising link. And we've got a really passionate, large audience. And they might just be the right people to hear about your product. And we'd love to talk to you. And that's another way we're looking to generate revenue. So we're definitely open to advertisers. And one last note, too. If you do have a chance and want to contribute to Jupiter Broadcasting, we're putting up a recognition wall. If you leave a note with your contribution, we'll put it up there. It's a good spot to maybe put your site URL on there and give us a quick little message. Because, of course, we're paying extra special attention to all of that feedback. And we want to hear from you. Also, a bit of an apology for my audio lately. You see, our microphones are all over the place. You've probably noticed in this episode my microphone's a little too loud. I've been stoked, which will be coming out later this week. My microphone is a little too quiet. And the problem is our camera's been freaking out. The input has been going up and down. So we're watching it, but unfortunately we had a little amp get in the way. Our camera started boosting it without us knowing. But hopefully we'll catch that next week. So apologies if that bothered anyone, but we're working on it. And thanks again.